Hi everyone, it's Ryan Hoover, your host of Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. Today, I'm visiting Y Combinator's San Francisco headquarters to chat with Michael Seibel and Kat Minyalik. Michael is the CEO of Y Combinator's Accelerator program. He's been through the YC program himself a couple times, actually. First in 2007 as the CEO of Justin TV, and again 2012 as the co-founder and CEO of SocialCam. Justin TV later became Twitch and was sold to Amazon, and then SocialCam was sold to Autodesk. Kat is a partner at Y Combinator and one of the people that convinced us to apply back in 2014. She's been at YC for 5 years, where she focuses on founder outreach, helping companies perfect their pitch, and much more. Prior to joining YC, she was chief of staff to Reddit co-founder Alexis Ohanian, and also worked on brand and strategy at Wired. On this show, we chat about YC's evolution, which has changed quite a bit since Product Hunt went through it about 4 years ago. Michael and Kat share their advice for founders, including counterintuitive tips they've learned over the years while working with literally thousands of companies. And we also chat about our favorite products, including a virtual assistant that will do anything, a $1,500 smart mirror that will get you fit, and a beverage that will get you high. But first, I want to give a shout out to our sponsors. So I'm here with Guillaume, VP of Growth at Drift, to talk about how he uses Airtable. One fun fact, a lot of people like Guillaume are using it to build full-fledged apps without writing a line of code.
Can you kind of walk through what is an MVP app that you've built using Airtable then?
And it's basically a small service where people can go and hit a Drift bot, enter their domain, their email, and expect in their inbox after 2 days an analysis from us on how long their sales team took to respond, which is super important for any business that has a sales team. And we wanted to build that. Instead of, you know, having a big engineering project with a database and all that, we just created an Airtable database. We hooked Zapier and Drift on top of it. 3-4 simple steps, which creates a great app which delivers value with zero coding. It's just insane.
You can get $50 in free credit by visiting airtable.com/producthunt. We're happy to have Intercom, a tool we've used since the beginning of Product Hunt, sponsor the show. Intercom has evolved quite a bit since we started using it in 2014. Many people are familiar with Intercom's customer support tooling, but really it's so much more. They recently introduced an app store, featuring hundreds of integrations with other services including Slack, Zoom, MailChimp, Stripe, and others. There's even a Product Hunt app available as well. One of our favorite integrations comes from Typeform, which allows you to present a fully interactive survey to your users directly on-site. And with Intercom targeting, you can even choose who to gather feedback from, based on their location, activity, company attributes, and more. Visit intercom.com to give it a try. Hey everybody, this is Ryan Hoover with Product Hunt Radio, and I'm here with Michael and Kat at Y Combinator. How's it going?
It's great. Thanks for having us.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. We're here in San Francisco, YC. It's kind of hidden, though. No one knows about this, do they?
Stealth office.
Stealth office. But yeah, Michael, first, maybe describe yourself, what you're doing at YC, a little bit about your background.
So I'm a partner at Y Combinator, and I'm CEO of the early stage program, so the accelerator and things to help early stage founders. I did YC in 2007 with a company called Justin TV, and that became Twitch and sold to Amazon. I did it again in 2012 for a company called SocialCam, which sold to Autodesk, and I've been working at YC since 2014, which used to be just a couple years ago, and now it's like...
Yeah, we went through Y Combinator, Product Hunt went through Y Combinator in 2014, summer 2014, so that was forever ago. Like, everything's changed, it feels
You're
like.
You're a veteran.
I know, it's
old
weird.
Old hat.
Old, I know, literally. And Kat, you were the, I think... You might have been the first partner at YC I met, I believe.
Yes, you were one of the... So I started at YC in 2013, and you might have been one of the first startups I met when after I started at YC.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I remember
now. I encouraged you to apply.
Yeah, yeah. I met Gary Tan, and then he introduced me to you, and we met at the coffee shop. Yeah, that was one of the things that convinced us to go for it. But what's your, so tell me about your background at Y Combinator.
Yeah. So I've been at YC about 5 years now, which is like a decade in startup world.
Yeah.
Two decades.
Dog years kind of.
Yeah, totally. And so I focus a lot on outreach. That means outreach to potential applicants, anything we do to get more people to apply. You know, we just did the Female Founders Conference this past weekend. I work closely with Craig Cannon on the blog and everything that you see externally, a lot of the media, press, and help a lot of the companies in the batch with their launches. Prior to YC, I worked with Alexis Ohanian, the founder of Reddit. And that's
Who's
how
that
I,
guy?
You know, that guy.
Serena's husband.
Serena's though. Husband, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah. And he introduced me to Jessica and Paul in 2013. And, you know, I worked with him on his fund and nonprofit. So met a ton of YC founders that way. So that's how I sort of got sucked in to the ecosystem.
Nice. So it feels like a ton has changed at Y Combinator since we went through it about 4 years ago now. I think there's, I don't know, it's, you announced the China expansion, there's a Series A program, doing more, you're doing the podcast, of course, that Craig's taking lead on. I don't know, how do you figure out what to do? When you have all these things going on, how do you manage all the things?
How about I take a couple and Kat takes a couple? So one of the things that we've been focused on a lot is how we can help alumni after the program. You know, once you do demo day, you raise your money, you still have a company to build. And so three things that have been great on that. The first is work at a startup. We basically want to help YC companies hire their first engineers. So we built this site where any engineer can apply to work at any YC company. And then right inside of Bookface, our kind of internal software for YC founders, they can sort through the resumes, they can reach out to candidates and essentially hire, which is something I wish I had when I was doing YC. The second is a program called the Series A program, where when you're ready to raise a Series A, we actually put you back into a batch, a much smaller batch, and you actually go out and work with a YC partner, Aaron Harris, to craft your pitch, figure out your fundraising strategy, and basically learn all the best practices of running a professional Series A process. Turns out that the difference between running a professional process and not is oftentimes the difference between raising a Series A
and not.
And so, like many things, we want to make sure that our founders have the knowledge they need to go out and kill it. And then the last thing is the continuity growth stage program. So now you've got a company that's like 50 to 100 people, and you're sitting there looking around saying, how do I manage all these people? How do I hire senior execs? What HR policies should I have in place? And how should I compensate my, you know, executive sales team or whatever? And we have another program for those founders where they come back together in a group and learn from some of our older YC founders and other execs on all of the nitty-gritty around actually managing a really fast-growing company. So three things that I wish we had when I was going through YC that I think make YC even more valuable. And you get all of them for free, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. Where else do you go to learn some of those things, the growth side of things? Because, I mean, when Product Hunt started, I actually never, ever managed anyone before then. And so I sort of got thrown into a fire of, okay, now we got to hire. I don't know how to do that. Now I got to fire. I don't know how to do that. And it was rough. It was tough. And of course, that's how most founders kind of learn it. Cause like you don't have I guess Y Combinator is kind of that, but it's not like there's a Stanford for founding a company, you know. YC's as close as probably there is for that.
A lot of punches in the face as a founder.
Yeah. And you're focusing, Kat, a lot on at least helping Craig with some of the content and of course there's Female Founders event and things like that.
Yes. And so some of the other things that have launched since, I guess, 2014 when you went through is Startup School. So that's happening right now, actually. Oh, right. And it's our free online class, and it's 10 weeks, and it's there are, you know, classes once a week taught by YC partners and alumni and other folks in the community, and then there's also Q&As that happen once a week. And there's a platform, and there's now, I think, about 15,000 people going through the program. And what's great about it is if you are just getting started and you want to learn the basics, you have a community now around you that can help you and provide you feedback. We have 150 YC alumni who act as TAs and who meet with the Startup School, the folks in Startup School once a week. So it's great because you get some feedback from founders.
15,000 is kind of insane.
It is.
Like, do you get a lot of email? How do you just manage even from a bandwidth perspective?
Our software team has built this awesome platform, and so it's not unlike Bookface in certain ways, and so a lot of the questions that come through will be posted on that platform, and we can answer them there. And I think that's the way our email doesn't get destroyed completely. And so I think having that platform where startup school, you know, students basically can and founders can connect is helpful. And yeah, I think that's been the way to do it. It's scaling through software. We did this because we wanted to figure out how can we help more startups get started. How can we help more founders around the world? And we do have a big population of international companies and international founders going through the program. So that's been awesome.
5 years from now. So we talked about the past 5 years a little bit. 5 years in the future, what is YC? Like, what's the grandmaster plan? Tell me all your secrets.
I think what's fun about YC is that it actually becomes more and more of a software company over time. And like that legacy was started with PG. There's almost all the original software was written by PG. But now like so much of the stuff that we do is actually software. Like working here kind of progressively gets more and more fun and more like you're the PM of a software company. And so as we scale YC, you know, the goal is always to make sure that people who are smart and want to build things have the opportunity to get funding and startup advice, regardless of who they know or where they come from. And so as we scale to more and more people, it's just going to be fun to see all the software we build. I think that's what I'm most excited about.
One thing that Michael pointed out recently is that YC itself is only, you know, just over 50 people working here full time, whereas our entire alumni community is over about 4,000 founders. So we really think of ourselves, there's two different ways to think about YC. We're either a 50-person company or we're a 4,000-plus person company. And so, you know, we communicate and work with founder with 4,000 people on a regular basis. So it's a really interesting challenge to have to figure out how to do that at scale.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild. And in the last batch was how many companies?
It was about 150.
150. Do you think you'll stay at that size? Or do you think it'll expand?
I think it's going to grow depending on how many great applicants we see. We don't really have strict growth candidates, like growth targets. If there's a good applicant, they're going to get in.
So you've talked to, if you were to guess, how many companies have you talked to individually? Like whether it's through email or in person or interviews.
In our lives?
In your lives. Oh my God. Like thousands, right? Each?
Definitely. More. I mean, I think I've personally seen 1,000 companies go through YC itself. Yeah. And that's not even including
applications
we read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 10,000.
So a lot of people listening are either wanting to probably start a company or maybe building a company now. What are some of the nuggets or maybe pieces of advice or maybe counterintuitive things that, you know, you've over the years learned that you think other people should know about? I know it's a really broad question, but it could be about hiring, firing, building, growing, marketing.
If we were to split it up, I think there are some that are really early mistakes and there's some that are mistakes after funding. So if we talk about really early mistakes for a second, I think someone out there, I can't identify who this person is. It's like this mystery person giving startups horrible advice about pitching. And like, it's really weird. It's almost as if they learned how to pitch from like television commercials or something, or like McDonald's or something, you know? And so like one of the really common mistakes is this like super snazzy, like almost marketing-y like tagline pitch that doesn't tell you anything about what the company
is. Yeah.
And so everyone's heard of Google when they say like, oh, Google organizes the world's information, right? That's like the perfect example of a bad startup pitch. Like, yeah. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. Like when I read it, I'm not sitting there saying like, oh yeah, I get it. I totally
information.
Get it.
Information.
Yeah. Organized, right? Whereas if it is said Google is a search engine where you type something into a box, you click enter and you get a list of relevant websites, at least you know what that means. And so I think one really big common mistake is they try to sell you with their pitch before just describing what they do. And I think that with the startup, with a good investor, they want to believe. So actually like 80% of the pitch is just tell me what you do and I'll believe. And the only 20% is like convince me that it's good.
Often I get people who start with a problem. They're like, here's this huge problem that, you know, I saw my mother, you know, and do the X, Y, and Z. And, but they've gotten 35 seconds into the pitch and I still don't know what they do. And at that point I've zoned out. So it's always best to start with that one line of like, what do you actually do?
We'll always ask questions. Like if we want to know, how did you come up with that? We'll ask. Or if we want to know, what's your progress now? Or like, you know, like a good partner in the pitch is the person that's being pitched. Like they'll be a good partner. If they're a good person, they'll ask you the right questions to get more information out. But how do I ask questions about your startup if I don't even know what it does?
Yeah, I think some founders, so we see the same thing on Product Hunt sometimes. You know, what is that tagline to describe your product? And if it's the most beautiful app in the world, like what is that? I don't know what that means.
So Product Hunt, that's already product. We already have that.
Yeah, yeah. We already got it. We're already the most beautiful. And so I think there's a few reasons why, like one people, they think that they need to have like buzzwords and like throw AI into everything. And maybe that works sometimes, maybe it doesn't. Michael's shaking his head. The other thing though, I think the reason why it's challenging for some entrepreneurs is that they have a vision of what it's going to be in like 5 years. And they're really eager to tell you what that vision is. But instead they skip a bunch of steps and they try to, you know, tell the Google story, you know, 10 years too early. And instead they need to say it's a box, you type into it and it gives you information on the internet.
Pretty simple.
Yeah.
I think the other one, it's kind of tricky. I think the other one that I see is people thinking that their idea is more important than their execution. And so people basically pitching me saying, here's my great idea. I'm going to go hire someone to outsource build it. And when I talk to those founders, you know, oftentimes what I say is like, if you are pitching this as a tech startup and you want to get access to technology investors, they're probably going to be very interested in how good you are at building technology. And you probably want to have that technical co-founder to help you do that. And I think that a lot of people try to hustle around having that co-founder, which is possible, but I don't think they realize how hard it is. And I think that like, if they knew how hard it was to hustle around getting a technical co-founder, I think they would just hustle to get a technical co-founder. Yeah. And so like, that's one where I get a lot of questions about like, how do I get this done without a technical co-founder? And I kind of just want to be like, that's like saying like, how do I become a successful NBA player without learning how to dribble? And it's just like, just learn how to dribble. Like it's probably, you probably can do it. But yeah. Just like, isn't it easier to learn how to dribble? Like just learn how to dribble. And you know, we give advice about how to do it, but it's just like, if your hack takes longer than the normal way, just do the normal way.
Yeah. For non-technical founders, what advice do you give them to find that partner, that technical partner?
So I always start with friends. I think non-technical founders always overthink how good and or experienced their technical co-founder has to be. And it's like, well, you can't build anything. So that person can build something that's better than you. And so I always say like, start with your friends. Think about who you know, personally or professionally, who writes code every day and enjoys it. And then write a list of them and rank order them by people who you find smart and who you like to talk to about things. And then go through that list and make those people say no. Like give them real offers, like 30, 40, 50% of the company, and make them reject you to your face. And then if they all say no, the next move is go work at a startup, a technical startup, and make more. Or if you don't have those friends, make those friends. Another side hack that I always tell people is that every good engineer has been asked by their friends to build their thing for them. Basically, like almost daily.
Yep.
And so
I got a really good idea.
Can
Bob,
you just build it for me? Yeah. Right? And so a side hack that I often tell people about is like, if there's a problem that you're really passionate about, like let's say you're passionate about giving like affordable loans to the poor, right? It's a great thing to be passionate about. Instead of pitching your tech friends on whatever your solution to that problem is, instead pitch your friends on how important of a problem that is. And how with a very small loan, you can really help a family get out of poverty and like create this like positive feedback cycle instead of a negative feedback cycle, and get your friends excited about that problem and start brainstorming with them the solution. It's a lot easier to get someone to build something when it's the thing that they came up with. And like as the idea founder, like you're going to be iterating and changing the product so many times. As long as it's solving the problem you want to solve, like does it have to be your specific way of doing it? No. And so that's kind of the hack to make it so that, you know, that technical founder doesn't feel like they're just being used for their hands.
Right.
Their brain's important too, which is really true.
I learned a variation of that in when I became a product manager for the first time right out of college. I thought I was doing everyone a favor by, you know, working over the weekends and defining everything and writing specs and then handing it to the engineers and be like, look what I did. Great. We're making progress. And of course, I quickly over time realized like that's actually the worst way of doing it because not only are the ideas worse, but now they have zero buy-in because they're like, Ryan's just telling me to do this. And yeah, it's like a really delicate balance to like, I mean, it takes a lot of communication skills, I think, to do that right.
It does. But it works well if you nail it.
This podcast is brought to you by Stripe. The best way to know if people like your product is if they'll actually pay for it. But collecting payments on the internet is harder than you might think. Stripe makes it easy for entrepreneurs to turn their ideas into businesses by helping them accept money from anyone, anywhere in the world. So if you're building an internet company and you care about revenue, you should check out Stripe.com. Stay tuned to the end of this podcast for my talk with Ashish Jain from GE Ventures and Avitas Systems, a startup using drones and AI to inspect industrial assets like oil refineries and power lines.
What are you, Kat? What mistakes have you seen or kind of advice that you often give, especially maybe it could be about anything, but you've supported a lot of launches and press and those types of things too.
Yeah. I mean, a couple things came to mind because I was just teaching a startup school class yesterday. So I talked to a lot of early stage founders who were going through the program. And one was similar, related to Michael's point that people worry too much about their, or they think the idea is the most important piece versus the execution. A lot of folks said, I am afraid to talk about what I'm doing publicly because I'm afraid someone is going to copy me. Like a number of people told me that yesterday. And I was like, you know, in the end, it's all about execution. It's all about what you, how quickly you and your co-founders are able to run with this. And it's actually, I recommend talking to as many people as possible about your idea because you never know who's going to be excited about it, who might be interested in being an early investor or, you know, who wants to, you know, yeah, or join the team. So yeah. I think it's actually, you're setting yourself up for, you know, for a worse experience if you decide you want to just, you know, do it alone in a box and not tell anyone. So I think that worrying about the competition is ridiculous. The other thing I think is that I meet founders who just take too long to launch. Like they want to make the thing perfect or they don't think they have the feature that's going to make it, you know, make it go. But I always say you got to get it out and into the hands of users before, you know, otherwise, how do you know that they actually want what you're building? You know, I've talked to a lot of founders at the Female Founders Conference this weekend, and they were like, well, we want to start with this marketplace, but we want to do like a VR element to it. And like, they were, you know, all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, like you can really only do one thing really well at the beginning. So focus on launching that first piece before you start thinking about adding VR or whatever, you know, adding to it. So getting out basically that MVP as fast as possible into the hands of early folks. Like you help people with that all the time with Product Hunt and Ship. So that's a huge benefit to early stage startups is being put in front of those early adopting users.
Yeah. Another thing that I've kind of observed too is people, they're not only scared to kind of show off what they're doing because maybe it's, of course, it doesn't look as pretty as it could be or doesn't have all the features that you're imagining. But also there's, I think, this feeling where founders are hesitant to launch because that's when the truth comes out in some ways. And so by delaying it, you know, oh, we'll do it next week. And then next week comes and, oh, we'll do it next week. What they're doing is they're saving themselves from the pain of seeing no one use their product. And of course, you just need to like figure it out. Like you got to put it out there and see if people use it. But I feel like that's also something that holds people back.
Yeah, definitely.
Way too often.
Totally agree. That's really funny. Yeah. It's funny because I just always, when I talk to YC founders, it's like a lot of their questions boil down to like, when does the pain end? And it's like the answer is like, it doesn't end, right? It's like, yeah. Your startup's not doing well, you feel pain. Your startup's doing great, you feel pain. Like it's like, avoiding pain, really, you should avoid the whole startup industry. If you want to avoid pain, if you like are cool with pain, great. Startups are for you. A lot of pain.
But the high highs are super high. I mean, when things are going well, yeah, there's challenges all the time. But It's also this like magical feeling too, I think, for me.
I always think about it like there's some people where like they can't get into that last gear. They can't get into that like 150% productivity level unless it's their ass on the line, right? Unless it's like, bam. And like for those people, startup's amazing because it's like, it is your ass. Like there's no one else's ass.
Yeah.
And so like to me, like that's that like, when you're like on the line and you hit one of those highs, you're like, that was really, really good. That's, yeah. But it's funny because a lot of people want to make these arguments about startups around like, oh, like what's the best career path? Or like, how do I make the most money in N years? And it's kind of, I always find founders like they're just unwilling to do anything else. Like everything else, they're kind of either bored or like pissed.
Yeah. It takes a special personality, I think, that you wouldn't want to do anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe you'd be, a lot of startup founders I know would be terrible employees.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. So one of the sort of segments that people love to hear about is just what products you love. So what apps are on your home screen? What products do you use weekly that more people should know about? Are there some that you can talk about?
Should we trade off? You want to go first?
Yeah. So I'm a huge, I've been in love with Jump bikes ever since they landed in San Francisco. And it's kind of opened me up to any kind of new transportation, like even the scooters. Excited to see that, you know, Skip will be in San Francisco. But I think it's like that. If I think about what in the past year has changed my life the most, it's probably the electric bike sharing, you know, trend. That's probably what I use the most on a daily basis. Weekly basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, I used to ride my bike to work and then I crashed and I stopped. But I've kind of hesitated because I get sweaty or I don't know, it's cold. Does that bother you at all? Or just?
I think when I had to bike a normal bike, I was always like, this is so much work.
Oh, right. It's electric.
But the electric assist makes me feel like a superhero. So I'm like, yes, I'm so athletic and great at biking. And then recently I had to bike a normal bike again. I was like, I couldn't breathe.
You know what they should do is they should give you capes so that everyone on jump bikes is just like flying around like Superman or Superwoman with a cape. I think it'd be great.
And I think it's an exciting time for sort of transportation in cities. One of our alumni, Remix, just launched a product. They basically help cities plan transportation. And they launched a product yesterday where they help cities kind of plan for these new types of transportation like scooters, bike sharing. And I think that's like that time is coming when all cities are going to have to change.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what was the most recent news? I think it was Skip and what other company got permits for scooters? Scoot. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Which I think was limited to a very, very small number of scooters. So it used to be Scooter Town for a little while. And now it's hard to find scooters. It's unfortunate. What about you, Michael? What apps, products? Are you jumping to work every morning?
I'm the one who told Kat about Jump. I love Jump.
Did you give her the referral code?
Yeah.
I lost that. I got a bunch. This is great. Like we got a we should do like a mini lightning round. So the first one is an app called Station. It's at station.io. Basically, it's like a browser for work. So you basically load up all of your like work web apps, so your email, your calendar, your Slack, your to-do list, your WhatsApp, everything. And it basically just organizes my work. And so when you turn this on, you're logged into all of your services and they're one click away and you're not like going through all of these freaking
Which tab
tabs.
Is Quip on?
Oh my God. It's so freaking annoying. And so it's just like, it's changed how I work. It's been amazing. And I have to do like too much time in Gmail. And so like, it just makes my Gmail time so much more productive.
I saw Station launch almost a year ago, I think it was. And I believe it's been a while since I've looked at it, but they have an app store kind of built into it. Is that right?
They do. So they support internal YC apps too, right? So if you ask them, like we have all YC founders have access to Bookface, like an internal resource for all the YC founders. That's supported. Our internal like product that we work on at YC, that's all also supported. And so it's just great. And they release like updates every couple of days. It's been probably like my biggest productivity hack in the last year.
Yeah. I find from a strategic perspective, what I found fascinating about it is once you get to some scale, now it becomes a distribution channel. And as we all know, distribution is king when everyone is like vying for attention. So I find that really interesting.
Yeah, they're in a really good spot.
They're good.
What do you got, Kat?
One from the last batch that I've been using a lot is Titan. I've been really getting into a bunch of different investing apps. So like, you know, Robinhood I've been in for a bit, but Titan I love because what Robinhood did in terms of democratizing access to, you know, individual stocks, Titan is doing for investing in a managed portfolio. But what I really like about them, it's like really beautifully designed, is that it's like, they communicate really well. They're constantly sending emails and they have in-app sort of like videos, and they're really trying to educate people about, you know, different what's happening in the markets. And
is it more for like a mainstream consumer than instead of like the crypto
niche
kind of? Yeah.
Though I've been, you know, do you have any favorite crypto apps?
No, actually, I'm not personally using anything on the blockchain, really. No dApps right now that I regularly use, or like crypto apps, honestly. I did invest in Bitwise as a consumer. Are you familiar with Bitwise? Yeah, it's just an easy way to throw some money in there and then they'll just, you know, invest for you on your behalf. And they choose basically it's an index of crypto assets based on market cap. So there's, you know, of course the market is crazy, but at least it's a little bit more stable than, you know, investing in brand new ICOs or brand new tokens, certainly.
Next up, I'm a new dad. I got a son named Jonathan. He's 4 months old, and there's this smart baby monitor called Nanit that has been amazing. I've bought most of the smart baby stuff and have been disappointed a lot, but Nanit is awesome. So basically, like a traditional baby monitor, you need to actually have like some device, some extra device you hold onto. Nanit is just so well integrated with the phone that it basically sends you a push notification if your baby's crying. You can basically set your phone up so that on background audio, you can hear what's going on. So even when your phone's off, you can still hear it. And you can put your family members on it. So like my mom can see my kids sleeping. And so she feels happy.
Through a mobile app, I assume?
Through the mobile app, exactly. And so it's just awesome. And it's like, you know, like that promise of like consumer hardware, or like that Kickstarter promise of like, man, if just normal people could build consumer hardware, it'd be really great. Like Nanit, home run. Like they nailed it. And like I look at Amazon at like other products and I'm just like, the rest of the products look like they're stuck from 20 years ago. And so that's my one dad pick.
What if there was a Nanit for adults?
I don't want to look at adults.
Yeah, no, I'm just riffing here. Maybe there's an opportunity. You know,
I'm sorry. I just screwed up your whole brainstorm here.
There is a Nanit for dogs, Petcube. I was going to say, I wish there was a Nanit for dogs, and I'm like, oh, that exists. Petcube,
my friend Jimmy and Steph, they have a dog, and every now and then when we're like out at like 9, 10 p.m. or whatever, they'll open up their app and be like, is Gussie okay? And they'll throw him little treats. And for those, I wish this was a video so you could like see how it works. But there's a camera and it's pointing, you know, out at the dog. And you actually flip, kind of like Angry Birds. You flip on the mobile phone and it shoots like little pellets, little like goodies for your dogs.
That's awesome.
Do you have a dog,
Kat? I do. I have a French Bulldog. He's Buster French Bulldog on Instagram.
Ooh. Nice plug. Yeah. Follow. Hit that follow.
Yeah. I got my dog in December, last December, and now I understand all the startup pitches I've gotten, like four dogs, because now I'm in them. I'm like, yes, I want all of this. Like
organic,
I'm totally
food for dogs.
Yes. Or there was an app once that was pitched to me that was like, oh, you can, you know, your dog can find its friends from the park on an app. And I was like, that's ridiculous. And now that I have a dog, I'm like, I want this.
Wait, the dog can find the dog's friends?
Well, so my dog has like 5 or 10 friends that he typically, you know, hangs out with, well, at least a few times a week. And I don't know any of their humans' names.
Oh,
so it's like so they would have profiles and stuff on this.
This is what happens to dog owners. She's like, I don't know their humans' names.
I don't.
That's irrelevant.
I can see how that'd be useful. You know, you go to the dog park all the time and like, how do you... Yeah, you could. There's a dating play there. Another
it's a riff. Play date.
Yeah, you could turn it into a dating app down the road. You know, your dog likes my dog. We should
go
hang out. I don't know.
Another big one for me was I've started trying out all of the like cloud workouts. I got addicted to this one called Charge, and it's live stream running, which sounds so lame, but it's actually weirdly
is a mobile
motivating.
App
yeah, it's a mobile app, and it's there's someone in your ear, and you see a leaderboard of like 10 other people who are running at the same time as you
on the street, not in a
you can run on the street or in a treadmill. And so then they're like, oh, Kat, you're going like this fast and you're about to like pass up Michael, who's going this fast. And then so I'm like, yes, I'm going to kill Michael. And so I'm not that much of a runner, but apparently I'm very competitive. Ooh. And so that works for me really well. Like there's a YC company in the last batch called Cloud Workout. I've tried Gixo. Like, of course, everyone knows Peloton, but like this is like, it's so... I was skeptical, but it's very motivating.
Did you see Tonal launch, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
No, what's that one? Yeah.
Basically, if you want to lift weights, it's a device that is assembled and attaches to your wall into the studs. And it uses, I don't know exactly how it does it, but basically you can do any kind of lift, whether it's biceps, curls, or bench press or things like that. And it then has a screen also kind of similar to Peloton and some of the other kind of physical hardware devices out there, which instructs you and guides you on how to do the best workout. So it's kind of like an at-home full gym, but it's only like a thing on your wall. It's really minimal. It's pretty slick. It's expensive. I think it's, I want to say $3,000 plus $40 a month or something like that.
I've been wanting to try Mirror.
Yeah, Mirror's another one.
I saw that one on Product Hunt.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Mirror looks really interesting.
It's
because it looks really futuristic. It's a mirror with a video on it.
Oh, I've never tried it, but essentially, it's like the live stream classes you can do, and I think that looks interesting. Let's get one for the office.
Yeah. There's this other company, actually, over the weekend, not embarrassed to say, I was trying to teach myself to pop and lock. Yeah, I know. It's called Steezy. Have you heard of it?
No.
So it's been around a while, actually, but it's a platform where you pay like a I think it's $15 a month or something, and you get access to all these different videos and dance instructions, whether you want to pop and lock or crump or hip hop dance or salsa, whatever it is. And it's pretty cool. It's kind of fun.
This looks pretty cool.
Yeah. And they've built it in a way that's like a course, kind of like Codecademy or any of those other kind of like boot camps online, where you have, start with the basics and you continue on they've sort of gamified it in some ways too. So that's new for me. I'm playing with that and we'll see if I can ever pop and lock. I will never prove it on the internet, but what about you? What other apps, products? Yeah, what's next?
Magic. So
I use Magic too.
Yes. God, it's so good now. So Magic's YC company from a couple years back, and their goal was to create like this extremely awesome, seamless personal assistant experience, but in the cloud. And the company is just, it's a hard problem, but they figured it out. And so Magic basically runs my life now. And I kind of realized there are two things about Magic that's amazing. Like one, it's 24/7. And so literally anytime, day or night, if you need something, like within 30 seconds, the person on Magic is texting you back saying we're on it. And like that feeling of like it's being worked on, it's just like, you're not doing it, but it's almost as good as you're doing it. Like someone's doing it right now. Amazing. Mm-hmm. The second thing is like the experience gets great when you like give up your whole life to it. So it's like you have to give them all your information, like everything they need to have. But when they have everything, you can just ask them to do something and they'll just do it. There's no back and forth. There's no, I need a train ticket from here to here. We're on it. Oh, like, please make sure to add it to my calendar like this. Great. We're on your calendar. Like, it's amazing. And so it runs my whole life. Like, I work here at YC. I don't have like an admin or like an EA or no. It's just me, Magic. Perfect.
So there's Finn and some others that are out there, and I've been so hesitant to use them because I know it's illogical actually, because it is expensive, but it's not expensive if you think about your time. And at the same time though, I it feels challenging to know that I'm spending $5 to make a restaurant reservation, for example.
Well, you know what they did that I really liked? So they made this change. Magic used to charge by hour. And it was like $34 per hour. And like that feels weird, right? It's like that's like a lot of money. What they basically did was did a subscription plan that's basically a flat rate and you basically get a certain number of tasks. And so you feel better because you're like, this might be a small task, but the next one's going to be like a big task, right? And like one of the things that Magic does is like my family all gets together for the holidays and like they help coordinate the flights for like my whole family.
Wow.
And that's like one task, right? So you're really? Like, okay, I'm getting my money's worth on that one, right? Like the restaurant reservation, maybe no, but like it all balances out. And so for me, that's really, really cool.
Okay, I'm very millennial and don't like talking to people on the phone if I don't have to. And I make Magic always talk to, when I talk to like, anything I need, if it's like customer service or like whatever, negotiating something, I'm like, Magic, can you do this for me, please?
Well, and they have these cool hacks. Like, you can set up an email address for Magic and like a name. And then like Magic, there's like a whole team of people who work your account, but they'll all refer to themselves by this one name.
Yeah.
And so like for the rest of the world just thinks that like this Steve person named Michelle works for me. And it's like, no, it's like 20 people. It's like an army. It's awesome.
Okay. I'm going to revisit that. Cause I hate talking to people on the phone. I hate logistics too. And in fact, I have two weddings in Hawaii that we need to plan for, and we're still working on it. So Magic, I need you. Okay. Let's do one product each, and then we'll end it.
Lightning round.
Oh my gosh. I haven't thought. You go first, Michael.
California Dreamin'.
Oh, yeah. Never seen that.
So a batch ago, we funded this company that's basically creating a sparkling fruit juice with THC and a very low dose. So it just gives you a buzz. Like, the whole idea is like it's like replicating having two or three beers. It works amazing. Unlike other edibles where you basically like eat it and then die, you don't die with this. It's like great. It's great for people's like first experience. Like, if you want to like pretend like your parents have never done any weed before and like get them back into like trying out something, like it's amazing. And the team is like so strong. Like, they've just done all the work to make sure they're following all the laws and under the regs and so on and so forth. So, great product. I've been incredibly impressed.
Where's it distributed right now? Is it in some dispensaries?
It's in online? A bunch of dispensaries. And it's also, I think in San Francisco and LA, you can get it delivered to your door. Like, the last time I ordered it, it was delivered in like 30 minutes.
Oh.
Yeah. It's nice. Pretty freaking cool.
Such a fascinating industry. It's, of course, blowing up now that it's becoming legalized, and soon probably most of the country. Yeah.
And I feel like then it's gonna lose all of its stigma. I think we're going to be like the last generation that's going to be like, oh, weed, like that's dangerous, you know? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, there's a lot of, lots of data, and even just alcohol is pretty damaging.
Yeah.
Yes.
And cannabis, weed is far less damaging and risky actually on average.
For me, I just thought about what was the last thing I ordered online, and it's Dear Brightly. Dear Brightly went through YC two batches ago, and they are making it easier to access like skincare, like retinoids, which is usually you have to go to a dermatologist, get a prescription. It's this whole process, but they make it easy. It's like they have beautiful, it comes with like beautiful like how-to, you know, like information. So it's really well done. I've gotten really deep into like the weird like skincare, like Korean skincare products universe. Yeah. Like I love like Mimi Box and SoCo Glam, like all of it. And and Dear Brightly is great.
Yeah, my girlfriend Susie, she's Korean, and she has I don't know how many containers of things that she puts on her face that every night. Probably 8 or 10 different things. And every now and then she's like, Ryan, put this on, then this, and then this. And I'm like, it's just my face is so wet. Okay, what is happening?
She will look young forever.
I know, yeah. I know.
I love the weird, like, 10-step process to look extra moist.
I know. Oh, that's such a gross word. You said moist. On that note, I think we should end it.
Whoa. We have a question for you.
Oh,
we're
no.
To ask you a question?
Okay, go for it.
All right. When I came out and started doing tech, I was in the YC 2007 batch. And back then, TechCrunch was kind of the arbiter of what startups were doing. That's changed. TechCrunch is kind of like does, you know, big business stuff now. The Product Hunt is the arbiter of what startups are doing. And that's your product. So like, how does that feel? Like you're in a weird way. Like, I think that like, you're more on the pulse of what startups are doing than almost anyone else right now. And you couldn't have imagined that when you just had the idea and you applied to YC, right?
No. I mean, yeah, I was an email list, and the idea was actually more, I like products. I like this conversation. Me and my friends, we talk about this stuff because we're geeks and we just love technology. And yeah, the email list was just a way for me and my friends to share stuff that we were finding. But then quickly we launched the site, and then quickly makers and founders were coming, and they're like, oh, we can get feedback. Oh, you can get like early adopters. And it's kind of grown into like a launch pad in many ways. What I have kind of described Product Hunt for me as, like, so I am very similar to everyone that uses Product Hunt in the sense that it's not like I'm it's very different than TechCrunch and editorial. It's not like I'm writing about these things and I'm choosing, okay, you're going to go on there and you're going to go on there and next week this company is going to launch. With exception of like a few companies that I know coming up, I wake up in the morning, I go to Phil's and get my coffee, and then I open up Product Hunt. And then I just look and see what are people making. And it's kind of cool because I don't know what's happening, which is part of the excitement too. And also, these are early companies. And granted, like some of these products are not very good because they literally just launched. Like if they're doing it right, they probably like launched with a shitty product. But the community is generally supportive. And the idea is like we just want to surface really cool, interesting ideas, even if it's not fully baked. A lot of the things you see today on Product Hunt will mature and be the things that mainstream uses in like 2 years. So yeah, it's fun. Still loving it, almost 5 years into it. So
it's an awesome community. Like I remember I met a woman who ran the Product Hunt Toronto community, and then she was in the last batch of YC.
Boom.
That's right.
Yeah. Open phone. Yeah. Open phone. And it's so cool to see because you follow these people that like over the course of multiple years on Product Hunt, and you're like, oh, that's a interesting little thing. And then suddenly it's blows up.
Darina organized multiple meetups in Toronto, and I think a few of them were up to like 400 or 500 people. And this is fully organized by her. Like we didn't do anything other than like support, share, and like send swag. Like she led it. So
I just loved when I started seeing Google and like other big companies show up on there. And I'm like, you guys like, they're reporters. Their only job is write about you. But like you're submitting on Product Hunt. I'm like, that's cool.
And it's fun. Some people complain about having, oh, Facebook is on there and they're number one. Boo-hoo. Honestly, I think it's good. Like it's good because we want to represent what people are making and what Facebook is making, what they're doing in a lot of different areas is really interesting. Just the same as, you know, an independent company or anyone.
Also,
really.
They have to get upvoted. It's not like they don't get some special pass. They still got to get their upvotes. Right. Like, so it's fair.
Yeah. There have been actually a number of different Facebook like spin-off apps or products that just never get much attention because they're, and now they're no longer around because they shut down. Not that upvotes equal success necessarily, but like, you know, just because it's Facebook doesn't mean everyone's going to like think it's amazing and awesome.
Well, dude, thanks for having us.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Is there any plugs with, when is like the next applications are happening now?
Application deadline's October 2nd. Get your applications in. We're going to start reading very soon.
You're going to be busy.
We're going to be
a little busy. Not that you aren't always busy, but.
You know, it is what it is. Yeah. A lot of fun.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers.
See ya. Stay tuned for my talk with Ashish Jain from Avitas Systems, a startup using drones and AI to inspect industrial assets like oil refineries and power lines. Thanks for joining us, Ashish. And thanks to GE Ventures for making this interview possible.
When did Avitas Systems start? What was the inspiration from the beginning?
We are formally about 18 months into our life cycle. The inspiration comes from the fact that GE is a very innovative, deep technology-driven company. When you look around all the industrial assets out there, they are generating a lot of data. The reality, though, is that less than about 2% of the data is actually used to make any decision. When you look at the consumer space, there are lots of companies collecting data on us, and it's massively exploited. Yet when you look on the industrial side, there is this opportunity to collect so much, do so much, and really nothing much is being done. So when we look inside GE, and so we saw that we had these solutions around sensing, around robotics, around analytics, we saw a tremendous opportunity to actually bring it all together. We got some DNA from outside, but we got the core DNA from GE in terms of deep tech and expertise and access to the customers.
Thanks again, GE Ventures, for making this interview possible. GE Ventures invests in startups that develop transformational technologies to solve big problems. Visit ge.com/ventures to learn more.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.